which includes a concert from Liverpool this afternoon in an hour from now. We're going to head to Leipzig before that to get a taste of what it was like in the city during Bach's time. Lucy Skeeping is your guide in the early music show. But with the time at 1 o'clock, time for a summary of the BBC News, read by Vaughan Savage.
An American soldier has shot dead at least 16 Afghan civilians and left 5 wounded during what NATO officials have described as an appalling random attack in Kandahar province. The soldier left his base during the night and went heavily armed into people's houses in nearby villages. He later handed himself in to the US military authorities and has been detained. Liberal Democrats at the party's spring conference in Gateshead have refused to endorse the government's changes to the NHS in England. Activists voted by 314 to 270 against a motion, backed by the party leadership, that supported the reforms. The result does not oblige the Lib Dems to scrap the health bill, as opponents had pushed for yesterday. The people of Japan have held a minute's silence to mark the first anniversary of the earthquake and tsunami, in which almost 20,000 people died. The disaster also triggered a meltdown at the Fukushima nuclear plant. There have been protests during the day against nuclear power. The United Nations and Arab League peace envoy Kofi Annan has been holding a second round of talks with President Assad to try to bring an end to a year of violence in Syria. But fighting has been continuing in the northern city of Idlib. One of the government commissioners examining whether Britain should have its own Bill of Rights has announced his resignation. Dr. Michael Pinto-Duchinski said the commission run by the Justice Secretary Ken Clark was deliberately ignoring the views of the Prime Minister and pursuing its own agenda. 6 British soldiers who died in a bomb attack in Afghanistan this week will be remembered at a service in West Yorkshire this afternoon. The attack was the deadliest on UK forces in more than a decade. 5 of the men were from 3rd Battalion, the Yorkshire Regiment. The weather. Most parts of the UK should be warm with sunny spells, with the best of these in the east. Tonight, it will remain rather cloudy in western areas with occasional drizzle. Clearer skies in some eastern parts may give chilly conditions with some mist and fog patches. The BBC News and Weather at 2:30 past one.
Vaughan, thank you very much. As I say, we're going to be at the Philharmonic Hall in Liverpool for a concert by the Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra this afternoon. Alessandro Taverna plays Grieg's Piano Concerto. Christian Lindberg conducts, and also on the bill, Sibelius's mighty expression of patriotic fervour, his second symphony, and Nielsen's bracing hymn to the rising sun, the Helios Overture. Our Sunday concert begins at 2. But now it's time to reach back in time with Lucy Skeeping in today's early music show.
Thank you. That was music by Johann Kuhnau, his church motet Tristis est anima mea, performed by the King's Consort. It's a luscious sound, isn't it? So why don't we hear more of Kuhnau's music? Well, the trouble is, his life was rather overshadowed by Bach. Kuhnau was a few years older, but they did tend to operate in the same musical sphere. Both wrote music for the Lutheran Church. In fact, Bach sometimes used Kuhnau's cantatas as models for his own. They collaborated in testing a new organ at Halle, and Kuhnau's nephew even became Bach's principal copyist. Probably the best-known connection between them, though, is that Bach succeeded Kuhnau as director of music, or cantor, at St. Thomas's Church in Leipzig. This was a very prestigious and sought-after job. Leipzig was the second most important city in Saxony, a centre of learning and commerce that attracted loads of visitors to its trade fairs, its opera house and university. And as you can imagine, after the extraordinary impact Bach made in the post, which he held for some 27 years, the city is now forever associated with him, leaving Kuhnau to become a mere footnote in Bach's biographies. The cantor's duties were extremely varied and demanding. He had to direct the music at the town's four main churches, the university and the Collegium Musicum. He also had to run the choir school, rouse the choristers each morning at 5 o'clock, supervise meals and teach Latin as well as music, and somehow still find the time to turn out a new cantata each week for the boys to sing, not forgetting special music for festivals and holy days. But on Good Friday, 1729, in the afternoon service, Bach presented the congregation at St. Thomas's with a new work of such power, such monumental proportions, and such a wide dramatic range that even those congregants who were inclined to doze off through the interminably long Lutheran sermons must surely have sat up and listened in wonder. It was the Matthew Passion.
Thank you.
O Mensch, bewein dein Sünde groß, O man, thy heavy sin lament, for which the Son of God was sent to die upon the cross. The chorale that brings to an end the first part of Bach's Matthew Passion, the Netherlands Chamber Choir, directed by Franz Bruggen. Bach's time in Leipzig began with an almost unbelievable flurry of compositions, including in the first 5 or 6 years alone, 4 passions, several oratorios and hundreds of church cantatas. After his previous job at the ducal court at Curtendo, he was probably more than delighted to have the chance to write so much sacred music again. But there may have been another reason for this creative hyperactivity. The thing is, Bach had been by no means the only applicant for the position of cantor at St Thomas's. 6 men in all had put their names forward, including Telemann, who as a student in Leipzig had already made a bit of a reputation for himself. In fact, at the time, he'd rather upset Kuhnau by enticing away several of his best church singers for his own opera productions. Nevertheless, the Leipzig authorities were impressed by Telemann's talent and energy, and on Kuhnau's death, they immediately offered him the post. Unfortunately for them, Telemann was now doing very nicely, thank you, in his new job up north in Hamburg. This was a truly lively city, prosperous, brilliant for music publishing, and being a port, it had an international buzz about it. And Telemann, in charge of the city's 5 main churches and just about everything else, was loving it, churning out an unbelievable production line of good music, including 46 church passions in as many years. Here's an excerpt from one of them, catchily entitled The Blissful Contemplation of the Bitter Passion and Dying of Jesus Christ. The baritone Berthold Possemeyer with Lapa Festante München, directed by Wolfgang Schaefer. Part of Telemann's Passion, the blissful contemplation of the bitter passion and dying of Jesus Christ, written for Hamburg in 1722. So it was a no from Telemann, but guess what? Bach wasn't even the second choice for the job. In fact, it was only when another musician, Christoph Graupner, also turned it down that the Gutbürgers of Leipzig finally, and somewhat reluctantly, decided to hire Bach as their cantor. And as they put it, to make do with the mediocre. It's amazing now to think that's what they felt. Anyway, in the summer of 1723, Bach, his wife Anna Magdalena and their large family moved into a spacious apartment attached to St Thomas's. The building has long since been demolished, but you can still get a sense of what it must have been like for Bach as he made his way each day through the large cobbled square, going back and forth between the churches and the choir school. The buildings are all fairly close together, so who knows, maybe he sometimes had time to pop home for lunch in between appointments. Mostly, though, it was probably full on 24/7, with any spare moments spent, say, auditioning a new chorister, checking on a faulty organ pipe, or maybe just running down to the local stockist for some more ink or manuscript paper. Bach's duties also included looking after the city's Collegium Musicum. This was a sort of civic music society that put on concerts regularly in the town. With hundreds of concerts each year, it was quite time-consuming, and Bach had to manage and conduct the orchestra and choose the repertoire, much of which he composed himself. Italian-style concertos were always popular. Bach had been interested in them ever since his time in Weimar some 15 years earlier, and Vivaldi's music in particular had made a lasting impression on him. This is Bach's version of Vivaldi's famous concerto for four violins. He transcribed it for four harpsichords instead, which gives it quite a different character. Less sort of showy, perhaps, but with an interesting contrast in texture between the keyboard soloists and the rest of the band. And in the final movement, the Allegro, as you'll hear, he gives each of them a chance to shine.
Thank you.
Bach's Concerto in A Minor for four harpsichords. The performers were Colin Tilney, Christophe Rousset, David Moroni and Christopher Hogwood with the Academy of Ancient Music. This is the Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and we're listening to music from Bach's years in Leipzig. Recycling is the buzzword these days, and musically speaking, you could say that Bach was very much a green composer. For someone who had to churn out so much music to order as part of his day-to-day working life, composing wasn't really so much a case of a moment of divine inspiration, as simple practicality, and that often meant reusing old material, something quite normal in Bach's time. The B minor Mass is a good example. Bach didn't so much compose it as compile it from earlier stuff that he'd written. We mustn't forget that Bach was thought of primarily as a master organist. He was often asked to go off and inspect some newly installed instrument in a church out of town, and he naturally developed good relationships with several organ builders. One of them, Gottfried Silbermann, became a close friend. He was godfather to Bach's son, Carl Philipp Emanuel, you know, CPE, and he was held in such high regard that he'd been given the title of honorary organ builder to the King of Poland and Duke of Saxony in Dresden. Bach was rather hoping for something similar for himself, and on Silbermann's suggestion, he decided to send scores of the Kyrie and the Gloria to his royal dukeness. Music which he would eventually incorporate into the complete Mass in B minor. Nothing happened at first, but 3 years later, with the backing of a Dresden patron this time, Bach was successful and he received the official title of Dresden Hofkompositeur. The following month, by way of a thank you, he gave a special two-hour recital to the royal household on the latest new Silbermann organ, naturally. Here's the powerful, swirling opening chorus that Bach sent to Dresden, the Kyrie, performed by the 16 under their director Harry Christophers.
Thank you.
Gothic cathedral in music, that's how someone once described it. The opening chorus of Bach's B minor Mass, finally completed in 1749, just a year before his death. Well, as we've heard, Bach's duties in Leipzig included producing a new cantata every week for the Sunday service. Most of them were linked directly to the ecclesiastical calendar. Sometimes, though, they'd celebrate a special occasion, the birthday of a ruling prince or his consort, maybe, wedding or death, or homage to some visiting dignitary. Every major event had to be marked with a special musical offering by the cantor of Leipzig. And in the same way that the great Renaissance painters used apprentices to help them complete, say, an enormous chapel ceiling, Bach sometimes got his best students to compose an aria or a recitative for his cantatas. Much stress was placed on learning by doing, and so it was a great arrangement, really, for everyone. Here's part of Bach's cantata number 192. We don't know for sure what occasion it's celebrated, but it's fairly jolly in spirit. Now thank we all our God with hearts and hands and voices.
Thank you.
The opening chorus of Bach's cantata Nun danket alle Gott, first performed in the winter of 1736. The following May, Bach travelled to Potsdam, just outside Berlin. He was now 63 years old, and the purpose of the trip was to pay a visit to his second son, Emmanuel, who was working there at the royal court as harpsichordist to Frederick the Great. But he was also keen to hear the king's excellent orchestra that he'd heard so much about. We're lucky because just a week after the visit, a glowing blow-by-blow account of it all appeared in a Berlin newspaper, which went something like this. In the evening, about the time when the regular chamber music in the royal apartments usually begins, His Majesty was informed that Kapellmeister Bach had arrived and was waiting in His Majesty's chamber, hoping to come and listen to the music. The king immediately gave orders to admit him and ordered that, rather than listen, Bach should go to the so-called forte and piano and, without any preparation, improvise a fugue on a theme given him on the spot by the king. When it was over, all those present were seized with astonishment. Herr Bach has found the subject given to him by the king so exceedingly beautiful that he intends to set it down on paper as a fugue. The story was later taken up by Bach's eldest son. After my father's return to Leipzig, he set the subject given to him by the king in fugues in 3 and 6 parts, added several strict canons, and had it engraved in copper under the title The Musical Offering. We know that Bach took just 2 months to complete the work, 16 separate sections, including a 4-movement trio sonata, specially for the king, a keen flautist, to perform himself. He sent a presentation copy to King Frederick, printed on the finest paper, with the inscription in Latin, "As the notes grow in augmentation, so may the fortune of the king." In this excerpt, the royal theme is placed in the middle of the texture. Bach decorated it in the French style, which, of course, Frederick, who adored everything that was pink, frilly and français, must have been delighted with.
Thank you.
Canon on a Royal Theme from Bach's Musical Offering. In his last years, Bach seemed to concentrate less on church music and more on composing instrumental pieces for public concerts. It's as if he was finally relaxing a little, enjoying visits to the opera in Dresden and calling on old friends. He would welcome musicians from all over Germany into his home for a little informal playing, conserving his energy for what were to be some of his very best and most profound compositions. Gradually, though, he began to withdraw inwards. His sight was failing, and on the advice of friends, he put himself in the hands of a famous eye doctor, the same one who had operated on Handel, and two cataract operations were performed, which weakened him further. Bach spent the last months of his life in a darkened room, revisiting his great organ fantasias with the help of his son-in-law. It was here that he composed his final one, fittingly perhaps based on the chorale, "Before thy throne, O Lord, I stand." On the morning of the 28th of July, 1750, he woke to find he could see quite clearly again. But later that same day, after 8:45, it was later written, in the 65th year of his life, Bach yielded up his blessed soul to his Saviour.
Thank you.
Bach's Chorale for Deinen Trot Tretig, performed there by Ton Copeman, and ending today's early music show, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Sam Phillips. In a moment, we're off to Liverpool for a concert including music by Sibelius and Grieg, Grieg's ever-popular piano concerto, and Sibelius's Second Symphony, which starts in the peace of a Finnish forest and ends in a burst of majestic Finnish nationalism. And we're not too far away from Liverpool later this week on Radio 3.
Elder conducts Elgar. In Radio 3 Live in Concert, the Halle Orchestra and Sir Mark Elder return to one of their favourite works, which the conductor sees as one of the greatest symphonies ever. Elgar's Symphony No. 2, performed live by the Halle Orchestra in Radio 3 Live in Concert, Thursday night at 7:30.
Back to today on Radio 3, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rome Williams, presents our Sunday feature this evening. It's a portrait of what he calls Swansea's other poet, the poet he regards as one of the 20th century's most brilliant and distinctive voices, the poet Vernon Watkins. When he died in 1967, he was in line to succeed John Masefield as poet laureate, but his work quickly fell into obscurity, and Rome Williams argues that he's been unjustly neglected. As you'll hear, it has more than a little to do with Watkins' association with Dylan Thomas. Swansea's Other Poet, our Sunday feature, begins tonight at 7:45 here on Radio 3. But now it's time for our Sunday concert, which was recorded last weekend in Liverpool as part of Music Nation. Here's Tom Redmond.
Hello and welcome to the Philharmonic Hall in Liverpool, where the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra are on stage to perform a programme of music with a Nordic theme. Sibelius's Second Symphony, Grieg's Piano Concerto with soloist Alessandro Taverna, and to start, Nielsen's Helios Overture. Well, like many Scandinavians, Nielsen was a bit of a sun worshipper, and he composed this work whilst on holiday in Athens with his wife in 1903. They had a room with a balcony, and it was the view from here that gave Nielsen the inspiration for this work that describes the journey of the sun over the Aegean Sea. The work begins in total darkness with a long, lonely pedal note before the first hints of sunlight appear in the horns. Nielsen himself wrote on the score, "Silence and darkness. Then the sun rises with a joyous song of praise. It wanders its golden way and sinks quietly into the sea." The Liverpool Philharmonic is conducted today by a man who's been described as the world's greatest trombonist, a force of nature, and someone who could fill a concert hall playing a kazoo. It is, of course, the great Swedish musician, Christian Lindberg. Interestingly, Lindberg never intended to be a conductor. He was in his 40s and performing around 150 concerts a year as a trombonist when he finally accepted an invitation to conduct the Northern Symphonia. And since then, he hasn't stopped. He's principal conductor of the Swedish Wind Ensemble and the Nordic Chamber Orchestra and still fits in a grueling schedule, both as a soloist and as a composer. Here he comes now, bounding onto the stage here in Liverpool to conduct a performance of Helios Overture by Nielsen.